You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm Victor, and joining me is William. William, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. Wait a minute.
What?
Have you broken something? Is that why you're suddenly being nice?
Your chair.
Are you
your
responsible
chair,
for my... Yeah, my chair. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out, we've had sponsors on this show in the past, and we've read their sponsorship ad reads and been very happy about that. But if you have a product, if you have a service, if you're out there listening and joining us, and thank you so much for doing it every week, we'd like to help share that. Can you please contact us, and we can talk about sponsorship opportunities. Go ahead and email victor@appleinsider.com, or even better, email william@appleinsider.com, and we'll go ahead and sort that all out.
Right.
We'd love to help spread the word about good services, wouldn't we?
Well, that bit I like. It's just suddenly I feel all responsible. Wait a minute. It's your show. I just come in while Mike's not available.
William.
Admittedly, he's not available a lot recently.
My dear friend.
I'm very grateful to him for that.
You've never been that responsible. It's okay.
I can't tell you this, but I've started. A certain extremely high-profile charity in the UK asked me to be their treasurer, and I spat out my tea when they said it, because of the idea of me being in charge of anyone's finances was ludicrous.
Clearly laughable, yeah.
I was deeply honoured to be asked, actually, so I wish I could have helped them. But there we go. Yes, they'd be out of business by now if I had. Yes.
Yeah.
So I have several broken chairs in a row. That's what's going on with me, and I'm not fiscally responsible. Other than that, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fantastic.
Ow.
You know, I want to talk. We just mentioned good products that we want to talk about. So one of my favorites are the applications by Serif Labs, Affinity. They have Affinity Photo. They have Affinity Designer, which I use all the time. Literally, I am drawing stuff day and night. I was never that good with Illustrator. I didn't really understand how to do Bezier curves or modify shapes or use Boolean logic to combine shapes. And using Affinity Designer has been revealing for me. The scales have fallen from my eyes. I love the product. I really do. And I'm not quite as good with Affinity Photo. I still stumble around in that quite a bit. But I've been using their Affinity Publisher product in beta. And it was in beta for quite a long time. And some disreputable lout on Apple Insider wrote a piece about how Affinity Publisher has launched out of public beta and is now available in regular release.
What, so everybody can buy it? How dare this scoundrel break the news like that? I think he should be given a good talking to.
Who was that?
Okay, it was slightly me. But, you know, it was factually correct, so I don't see...
Actually, there is an error. If you look at the article on Apple Insider, the first screenshot is a lovely screenshot of Affinity Publisher. What does the caption say to that? Do you know?
Well, I wrote it, so I should know.
It says...
Oh, that's dreadful.
It says, okay. Affinity Photo has come out of its extended beta. There you go. You write the review, you write the whole release, and then caption it wrong.
Actually, I think you find you are mistaken there. You're totally wrong. I really can't imagine. Is that typing sounds you think you hear there? I don't know why.
Would that be the update button being pressed right now?
yeah, tiny bit. Yeah, okay. I'm glad we opened this discussion and got it out everywhere.
So let me talk
Affinity
about
Publisher.
Let me talk about
excellent.
Publisher.
I was very impressed, but tell me more.
Okay. So years and years and years ago, I used a product called PageMaker. And PageMaker was an Adobe product. Well, it was an Aldus product first. And used to use that, ages ago when I was doing the school newspaper when I was a student. And that was when it was Aldus. And then we used it at IBM when I worked at IBM under an internal product that Adobe had built out of PageMaker called FrameMaker.
Oh, good grief. FrameMaker.
FrameMaker was public, but they renamed it Frame 2000 specifically for IBM.
Oh, okay.
Which was wild. So I used Frame and Frame 2000 there. And then I graduated to InDesign. I started using InDesign actually, I want to say 1999 or 2000. And at one point, I was even teaching InDesign to high school students around 2005. So I have a long history of this sort of desktop publishing kind of thing. And along the way, touched Quark Express and so forth. And Publisher has been such a joy to use. It really is. I mean, it's so familiar and it's so comfortable feeling. And I know that's a bad way of describing things, but there are only a few things that I ever have filed bug reports on. There are only a few feature requests I ever submitted during the public beta process.
Do you mean that it's familiar and comfortable because you know other Affinity apps, or is it? It's not a knockoff of InDesign. That's not how you know it, is it?
Well, it's not a knockoff of InDesign, but one of the things that you realize when you approach a product like this is that you need to have a number of the tools and a number of the functions in place in a way that doesn't feel like learning a whole new language. So,
I mean, you're doing the same job in two things, so yes.
Right, you're creating a document for publication. You need to be able to have a text box. You need to be able to have image box. You need to be able to place vector art. You need to be able to do these kinds of things that are common tasks, right? One of the cool things about Publisher is that it has personas integrated into it. So it's got the photo persona and the design persona. So even if you're in Publisher, if you have those other applications installed, you can go and click on that and then edit objects directly within Publisher using those personas. Which is great. That is so handy.
I now have Publisher because, of course, you can't review it without having it and trying it out. I don't have the other apps, and I'm nowhere near as familiar with them as you. But I like very much the stuff you get from only having Publisher.
See, I'm in the reverse boat. I have the Publisher beta, which didn't have the persona functionality enabled, and I have Designer and Photo.
Hmm. We should get together sometime.
I think so. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll pop over for tea.
I would like to point out, though, that one of the good things about the Adobe suite is that once you've learned, say, Photoshop, the keystrokes, the shortcuts, most of the positions, it's Illustrator and InDesign are very familiar. In fact, I taught myself InDesign partly that way, partly because I was working at Radio Times magazine, where they used it a lot. I love InDesign, so I would be very happy to carry on using it, but Publisher has certain benefits, doesn't it, to do with, well, cost, really?
Right. So when you buy into InDesign these days, you're buying a subscription. And some people like that because, you know, it simplifies their life. They don't have to think about it as a burdensome cost. Mm-hmm. They can just go ahead and pay a little bit every month and always have an up-to-date application.
I would argue this Quark Express, of course, which I believe Quark does have a subscription model, but you can also buy it outright. And a friend who was a publisher was actually funded to do a new business. And because of the terms of the funding and her requirement to report back about the funding, the one-off purchase was far better for her. So she went for Quark. She seems very happy with it. So that's worked out.
Yeah, and people tend to go for Quark if they have a legacy need. If all your archives are in Quark, you need to stick with Quark, right? Changing your whole workflow.
I realized I have used Quark. I thought I hadn't, but I remembered one magazine must have been on Quark. But it's so long ago, I certainly don't have any files from there. So I'm free. I can use anything I like.
You are. And, you know, I like Affinity Publisher very much. And I am looking forward to it. You know, it seems like they're going to be releasing an iPad version, I suspect.
Yes, isn't that brilliant? Because there's no InDesign on iPad yet. That's just going to be so useful for me. Yeah, looking forward to that. I'll buy that the moment that's out.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, that's what I wanted to say about Affinity. I just love Serif Labs. I'm really happy with the products. I like the idea and the feeling that I get that I can just be a one-time payment licensee until the next version and be good to go. And, you know, I know people like the Adobe model, but I've run into pros that have used Adobe and run up against that subscription model because having version changes happen on them breaks things.
True.
With Adobe, you have difficulty reverting to prior versions, especially if they've retracted those prior versions completely.
Which they are now doing more of. And although they won't state it, we've covered this on Apple Insider, you used to be able to go back to old versions or stay on to older versions. And now it's only, I think it's one because of a legal dispute and various other issues. So I'd actually forgotten all about that. That's a key part.
Yeah.
I mean, you've used Publisher extensively throughout the beta process. I'm at a day into it. I like it very much, but I actually have a magazine project coming up that I would ordinarily have gone to my client's InDesign account to do it, but I'm going to try it in Publisher because I really think the way you learn something is by using it in anger for an actual product, an actual result. Yeah, it just when you know the need, I've got to get it to look like this. How do I do it? Then that gets into me more than, you know, reading the help files or something. So looking forward to doing that for fun.
Absolutely.
Yay.
As a neat trick, you know, go ahead and the bug that I ran up into, the feature that I wanted, it's not a bug, the feature that I wanted is when you change things outside of Publisher, it recognizes that the linked file has changed. And the dialogue that comes up says, hey, the links file has changed. And that's kind of it. So I had to locate where the resource manager was and then update everything manual. And I would have appreciated if that dialogue had said, hey, things have updated. Do you want to ignore this? Or would you like to go ahead and update the linked resources or even just open the resource manager? Because if you give a dialogue, go ahead and make it actionable directly from the dialogue. And that's the request that I put in for that.
Okay.
So that was my one contribution during the beta process. I had a few other thoughts, but that was the one that I remember vividly.
And have they done it?
I am not commenting because I am still open. When I open Publisher, I'm still opening the beta product.
Right. It's silly, isn't it? We tend to, I mean, I say we as journalists tend to use betas, but there's lots of public beta presses. This one was public as well. I find I occasionally run into problems that I find out I'm still using the beta, even though I've bought the original one. I just haven't downloaded it to this device, and betas, some of them time out. So suddenly I find I can't do any work because I've been thick and not updated properly. It's a terrible problem, isn't it? I don't know how the world copes with this.
Yeah, the world of Apple Insider journalists that copes with it. Yeah, exactly.
It's bigger than that, you know. It's huge, really. Yeah.
Well, speaking of things that are bigger than that, so we published an article. Amber over at our site published an article about her hands-on experience with Cycle, which is Apple's new menstrual cycle tracker in iOS 13.
Yes, it was a good piece.
And
I actually thought watching the keynote, all the stuff about the watch, menstrual cycle was the only really big new thing. I mean, I like the other stuff, but that's the one that felt like it was important.
Well, so this has been an area of Apple Health that has been missing for years.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had Apple Health for ages upon ages upon ages, and it has never addressed this. And that's 50% of the population.
Yes. To be fair, I don't think Apple's the only one that haven't been doing it. But if men had periods, I don't think it would take till watchOS 6 to get this into it. But
yeah,
it's here now, and Amber's piece is really thorough, says how good it is.
It really is. You know, and I've experimented with these different applications in the past just because I want to have insight into what the application support is like. You know, what is the interface like? What are the important parts of tracking or not tracking? And what are the outcomes, right? You know, are you looking, what are you looking to get out of it? And, you know, the old way would be for a gynecologist to hand you a piece of paper that looks basically like a calendar chart, and you write down which days were heavier or lighter, or which days were more pain or less pain, or things like that. And people are terrible at record keeping. Mm-hmm. I mean, just lousy at it. Give me a piece of paper, try and write down something and come back and show you what my records were like. No, I'm not keeping a good log of anything like that. And I just know myself. And so having applications that can prompt you and ask you to record how you felt or how things were, and then calculate a prediction around when the next instance of the cycle is going to take place is really helpful.
Yes.
You know, just to be able to have that conversation with the doctor and say, well, here's what my record actually looks like, goes a long way for diagnosis and monitoring conditions. You know, fertility tracking comes into play because you can use it to calculate a fertile window, which is very helpful. And if you're trying to become parents, there's a lot of things in there. Now, this is just obviously the first version, so it's going to be interesting to see how it develops.
Yes, I completely agree, and I like what we see of it so far. It's fascinating to me how much health work Apple is doing. Am I making this up? Or did Tim Cook once say something like Apple will be remembered for health, more than it is the iPhone or something along those lines. And if I'm not crazy and making this stuff up, I believe that.
I don't remember that one, but what I do remember is that they have something like 50 or more doctors on staff. They have a dedicated health lab. Yes. They are making big strides in this.
And of course, you know, yay for Apple, but as Apple demonstrates the success of the market, you know, Android and whatever, Huawei, whatever they come up with. Yeah.
I'm fine. How are you?
Whatever they come up with, it will do the same thing as well. And that means everybody gets it or at least something like it. So that's just brilliant.
Better for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Does. Speaking of wins, there is a company, I believe in England, called Kano. And Kano started a few years ago with Raspberry Pi software, basically. And what you'd get from them was you could either download the Raspberry Pi software yourself onto your own Raspberry Pi, or you could get a Kano kit. And the Kano kit was a Pi with a case and a speaker, and you'd connect your own keyboard and screen. And it would teach you rudimentary coding. You know, it's
how do you spell Kano?
K-A-N-O.
Oh, no wonder I don't know them yet. I've been talking to every single company in the UK ever, but doing it alphabetically. That's where I've been going wrong.
Well,
that's why I've never heard of them.
Clearly.
Okay. But now, spoilers, you've told me the K's.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the initial stuff was a little bit clunky and slow to use on old Pis and didn't work really well. Although there were definitely people who were using it and enjoying it. I kept reloading it periodically, but could never really get my kids to enjoy it for more than 30 minutes at a time. Right. Then they went ahead and licensed the Harry Potter property and built a wand with an accelerometer in it and a gyroscope. Excellent. And so you could program the wand to do different things with applications. So when you shake the wand at the screen, items on the screen lift up and so forth.
Brilliant. Okay.
And now they have partnered with Microsoft to create a thing called the Kano PC, which is an 11-inch touchscreen tablet that docks on a keyboard. And there's still an assembly part to it because you have the main board that contains all the stuff, but you have to connect the battery and connect the speaker and make some other connections to it and then put a case on it. It's not nearly as cool as doing the Raspberry Pi stuff, but you know, it's also approachable. You know, anyone can plug stuff in, so you want things that are achievable. The Kano PC is going to be available for pre-order for $300 and will ship to the US, Canada, and UK on October 21st. Now, the question, is this going to eat iPad sales? Well, it does run Windows 10. It uses a 1.4 gigahertz quad-core Intel Atom with 4 gig of RAM and 64 gig of storage that you can, of course, expand with a microSD card. It's got Wi-Fi, it's got USB ports, it's got Bluetooth, it's got an audio jack, it's got a keyboard case. And just like Kano does, it's got software that teaches how computers work, it teaches computer architecture, creating emoji with binary code, and it's got Kano projects so you can, you know, make drawings with MIT Scratch kind of language. In the old days on the Raspberry Pi stuff, they had Minecraft with JavaScript lessons where you'd be running a Minecraft for Raspberry Pi version on it and then break into the console and edit your Minecraft world with code, which was pretty cool. And so this is the kind
of... Sorry.
Go on.
I'm still going back to the wand bit. The only regret I have about Apple Pay on the watch is that I use it now to go through the London Underground system. And it used to be that on that and on buses, there were some people who had... we used to have a thing called an Oyster card, what we still have. But it was a credit card side thing with typically a tiny little chip on it, whatever you call that. And they used to stick that on the end of a wand so that they could walk through the London Underground with a wand and just point at where they wanted, and that was just style. That was British wit. I actually liked that. Oh, yes. Anyway, sorry, you're talking more serious things, and I'm lamenting the whole lack of Harry Potter London.
Do you still run at the brick barriers between the platforms to see if you can go into the three-quarters platform?
I only did that once. Thanks for bringing it up. There was a vending machine there, though, so I profited.
I knew there was. You also profited a nice bump on your head.
Spend a bump, get a Mars bar. There you go. Deal. This is not medically advisable recommendations from the Apple Insider podcast. Please consult your doctor if you have wall issues. You were saying.
Right. Change gears entirely. Let's talk about Catalyst.
Oh, yes. Yes. Sorry. Catalyst. I don't know what I was thinking of there. Probably catalytic converters. That's what they should call this.
No.
Yes.
No.
Sold Apple.
No.
Call it a catalytic converter.
No. Yay. So,
okay, what about Catalyst?
Well, Catalyst is a tool set that eases the transition of iOS apps back to the Macintosh. It sort of bridges the gap so that you can use your UIKit-based iOS code on a Mac. And, you know, we've seen that Apple's working on doing that for news, stocks, voice memos, and home. That was what we saw with Mojave. But there's evidence that suggests that macOS Catalina is going to have messages and shortcuts for Mac. Now, we knew that shortcuts for Mac was going to exist because they showed us that in the keynote, but it appears that they're doing it using Catalyst.
Oh, I see. Oh, now I have Catalina on my old iMac. It just takes a very long time to open it. I'm just going to start that up, and in about an hour's time, I'll be able to. Will I be able to find anything and actually use it? No. Too soon?
Don't know.
Too soon?
Don't know. Well, okay. So the Catalyst version of Messages is something that was revealed by Stephen Trout and Smith. He said, there's a whole lot of evidence in Catalina. They're working on a full Catalyst version of Messages, much like Shortcuts for Mac. So just like Shortcuts, I decided to cut the chase and do it myself by calling the system frameworks. Voila! And he showed screenshots of Messages looking very much like the iOS version with all of the screen effects, which previously haven't been possible to do on a Mac.
I gotta say, I'm less fussed about Messages because I've got it right here in front of me. I find it very handy to reply to. And actually, as much as I like the odd firework thing every now and again, I don't care.
Well, the mistake that you're making here they weren't there. Is that if you have the Catalyst version from iOS, then you also get the Messages App Store. So if you use other features of Messages, whether they're third party or not, then those come back as well.
I see where you're going with that, but rather than a mistake, I would call that a positive choice.
The oversight you're making.
I do not care. even though you've told it to me, I'm trying to think what attachments you use. I mean, I know if you tend to use them, you use them a lot. So I'm not dissing that thing, but I'm thinking I've used, there's a direction thing, location finder called Where To app, a very nice app on iOS. I've used that to send directions to a friend when we're meeting up somewhere. But that's it, once in a blue moon. And at my Mac, I've got everything else in front of me. I can send them a link as easily. So for me, the messages, yep, great, fine. Already got everything I need. Siri shortcuts on the Mac. Oh,
so what you're saying is that you don't need messages to do anything more on the Mac than it does today. All you need it to do is send a text message. Is that right?
Yes, that would be it. I've considered this for several seconds now, and yes, that's it. Hey, I'm nothing against messages. I just, what it is fine with me. And Siri shortcuts is exciting me. So tell me about Siri shortcuts. You know more about this than me. What's going on? When we're going to have it? Can we do everything on it? What's going on? Is it brand new? Is it going to replace Automator? What's happening there?
You are breathless today. So
is AppleScript in danger?
AppleScript is so deeply embedded in stuff, I would think that it would be hard for it to be in danger, although it certainly seems like it was in question when they began to introduce JavaScript into AppleScript editor.
Right. I remember Microsoft's managed to toss AppleScript out of Word several years ago and eventually got it back in. So,
yeah. Automator, I think, is the one that's more likely to be replaced because Automator is very much akin to shortcuts in that you stack different elements against each other to create an automation. And, of course, you can save that as something that you can drag and drop on like an application, or you can use it in the Automator interface. There are all kinds of little ways to do it. It's a nice thing. Shortcuts feels kind of similar, but in some ways more powerful. And with iOS 13 and with macOS 10.15, Catalina, Shortcuts, first of all, comes to the Mac, which is nice because big screen and keyboard make it easier to use. Tapping on Shortcuts to create them in iPhone is just difficult.
Wait. You can't handle Siri shortcuts on the phone because it's small. You're old, mister.
No, I'm
your
not.
Eyesight's clearly going.
It's not the eyesight. Oh, right. It's the tap targets are really small.
He can dish it, but and he can't take it.
The other part of this is that with iOS 12 Siri shortcuts, the variables don't really tell you what they expect or what's possible. So there's no guidance for helping you create a shortcut, especially if it's your first time doing it. With iOS 13 and 10.15, macOS 10.15, you get guidance. You get the shortcut letting you know what inputs and outputs are acceptable here so that you can go ahead and make the thing with a lot more ease.
Okay, we'll go along with that. I've not had the problems with variables, but I realize sometimes when you're really deep in the weeds, trying to keep track of which particular nugget of a variable it will pull out for you. That's taking me a time to understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if you're doing simple short things that are only a few elements long, that's not bad. But if you end up with some monstrous ones like I've seen that are 60 and 70 elements long, it gets nightmarish.
I think 20 or I've hit 30 steps in a shortcut before.
Yeah.
Yes. My name is William, and I'm a Siri shortcuts user.
You are. You absolutely are.
Oh, yes.
Now, the thing that I was thinking about, we talk a lot about Catalyst. I've been trying to figure out for myself what I think the way forward is for iOS and Mac development. And it occurs to me that Catalyst is sort of a patch. It allows iOS apps to come to the Mac, which is good, undoubtedly good, especially if you've been writing iOS apps for some time. But if you never really wrote a whole lot of iOS apps, but you did focus on the Mac, it doesn't make a lot of sense for your path to be using Catalyst, because then you'd have to go and learn how to use UIKit and write iOS apps and then bring them to the Mac. So this is where I think things get interesting. SwiftUI goes ahead and makes it easier to develop interface code with fewer errors, delivering more features using Swift. And I think that's the sea change, is that within a few years, I would say SwiftUI takes over.
Okay. I've been talking to developers about Catalyst and SwiftUI, and certainly some of them are saying exactly that, yes. I don't think I really appreciate quite what SwiftUI gives them. They seem very excited about it.
It's a declarative UI, and what that means is that it's another layer on top of things, so another layer distant from the metal of things. So what happens is you write what you want to happen, write what the UI is going to be, and you don't have to write it for specific hardware. Underneath that is what's called a DSL, and I forget the exact acronym, but basically it's a descriptor language that understands the different outputs and then takes the UI and compiles it for those output devices. So you write your Swift UI and then use the DSL to go ahead and create the output target. You currently would be using it for, you know, a DSL for Apple TV, a DSL for phones, a DSL for iPad OS, and then for Mac. But there's no reason why you couldn't also have a DSL for the web as an output or for Android devices as an output and write Swift UI to those.
Okay, as long as Swift UI is good, then that's brilliant.
I mean, this was
rubbish.
The whole philosophy of Java, right? Write once, run anywhere. And it was a beautiful goal, and it never quite exactly worked, although it worked to some degree.
It worked enough for Microsoft to have a very good go at absorbing it out of existence.
Yeah. You know, Android and Java and Windows 10 all pursued this goal of making code that scaled up and down to run across all these different devices. And all of them kind of failed along the way. Now, Java didn't fail, except that the Swift UI, I mean, I'm blanking on the name of the actual UI that Swing tool set was the interface that Java did. It was nasty. So you could have your stuff look equally bad everywhere, or you could write Java under the covers and then write a UI that was native on top of it, which is the way to go. But that wasn't write once, run anywhere exactly, so it sort of fell apart a little bit. With Android, you can write once and run on most Android devices, but there are wrinkles about Android devices down to screen size and other things that make them run better or less well on each device. So using Swift UI and using this declarative stuff is a little bit more like React Native, except React Native is coming from the web and then going to devices. Here it's coming from devices and working the other direction. But
okay, I can see that. So good. Let's do that.
One of the things,
let's everybody do that.
I'm really hopeful for Swift is currently open sourced. I'm hopeful that Swift UI becomes open sourced too, because I think that would go a long way towards spreading its adoption.
Okay. Well, it's looking like it's got a very good start, but who knows how these things will play out. That's,
Yeah. Anyway, it's beloved by some developers so far, and I think it can only do good things.
I did. I mean, some of the developers I really admire the most are very keen on it. I'm actually finding this is not a reflection of the development industry. It's more of the apps that I tend to use, that the apps I most like, the developers I most rate, are already doing Mac and iOS things. So for them, Catalyst isn't as big a deal, although they're all looking at it for various things as well. But we'll see.
Yeah, like I said, if you're using if you're developing for iOS, then Catalyst makes sense to pursue. And it's not necessarily easy. It's not like there's one checkbox and bang, you've got a Mac app. You do have to do significant amounts of work to make things function correctly on Mac, especially if you have a complex iOS app. But it's the easier path than starting all over in Swift.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you were developing a new product, then I would say Swift would probably be a good place to start.
Well, look what they've done. Invented a new language and a new thing to hang on the front. Cool. Okay.
Are you ready for some good news?
No, I'm sitting in the middle of Brexit and the Tory election farce that's going on over here. Just to explain, new prime minister being elected, there's lots of public campaigns. Public have no say in it whatsoever. All
right,
pointless.
Right. So let's be miserable. Clear. Elected so,
no,
by
I'm
a small.
I'm in a bad mood. Let's stick there.
I mean,
sorry. Elected by a small.
Small subset. Elected by a small subset of people who are electing the leader of their party, technically, but know full well that the leader of their party will go ahead and presume the prime ministership.
Right. What were the odds of that? Yes. I mean, look, it's always been that way. We've had previous governments where this has gone on as well, and I've not been happy with that either. But this time, the candidates that are being paraded like it's Britain's Got Talent or America's Song Idol, or whatever it's called, and the worthlessness of every minute of it when they're all identical and we have no say in it anyway, is making things a little bit miserable this week, actually. So, no, I am resistant to good news, but try your best.
Well, you're busy looking at distinctions without a difference. I have a survey.
Okay.
And this will shock you, William. This is going to shake you to your core.
What, are you telling me that you're going to ask me for a survey? Or
no, I'm going to tell you the results. I'm going to tell you the results of the one that was conducted.
Right.
And you are going to be caught flat-footed.
Okay, I'm bracing myself. Is this a survey in which I apparently like Windows? Because I have some issues.
We know the results of that one. And yes, across the board, William Gallagher approves of Windows in every aspect. Yes.
Yeah, I like Doors as well, but okay.
Nice. Nicely done. The especially after that incident with the three-quarters platform. You like Doors.
Yes, yes, yes. Nice call back there. Okay, go on. We have both braced me.
Jamf.
Let's hit it.
Jamf,
yes.
Which is a technology management company in Wisconsin, conducted a survey of their customers that showed that enterprise IT workers strongly preferred Macintosh. Now, they are an Apple-focused company. They have they make management software that helps make managing Apple products easier for the IT department, basically.
And they have actually sponsored your show before, haven't they?
In the past, they have sponsored the show.
But now they've moved on to surveys.
Note that they do not have a sponsorship read this episode, but never mind. They sponsored this survey. So they surveyed their customers, and the survey showed that when participants were given the choice to choose the type of device that they were allowed to use at work, 72% chose a Mac.
I'm honestly surprised. I mean, I see the benefits, but personal preference, you would have thought it'd be 50-50, wouldn't you? I don't know.
Well, so Jamf surveyed end users to figure out why they consistently choose Mac and what their experiences have been as a result of their choice. The survey was actually conducted by third-party market research company Vance & Bourne, which was contracted by Jamf in collaboration with Apple. The findings reveal that Mac users experience high levels of employee satisfaction, productivity, collaboration, and business sectors. It was conducted across a broad range of departments, including IT, human resources, marketing, engineering, sales, business development, and more. And Jamf for themselves have been growing. So by the end of 2018, they managed 48% more Macintosh than they did at the end of 2017. The number one reason for choosing Mac was often that users had a strong preference for Apple products. The second highest reason cited was that end users simply felt the Mac was more reliable than other computers.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
Now, you could suggest that this is a little bit flawed as a study because Jamf manages Apple computers and they surveyed their customers. So their customers are going to have what? Apple computers.
One would imagine so, yes.
You know, asking the converted, what do you prefer? Well, I prefer the thing I'm using. I'm happy with it. Okay, good, nice, yeah. And they dug a little deeper and obviously found out why people like it. Reliability, ease of use, preference for user interface and design, and so forth. But when they were asked if workers felt they'd be unable to do their job effectively without a Mac, 79% agreed.
Goodness, 79%.
And that was...
Well, yes, I can see that more. That was, I'm sorry, I took over there. You're saying that was...
Well, especially true in human resources and IT is where that showed up.
I would have thought IT would be more PC-based. Just that's stereotypical based on all the IT people I've worked with over the years. Fine people tended to love Windows because they liked fixing things, really.
Well, there's a bit of a job preservation to that, right? If you're certified in Windows, you know, if you've gone and done certifications... And it's all you're trained on, then everything else seems strange or silly or not as good. And so once you're in there doing that, that's the thing you recommend to buy. And of course, you've got a voice in purchasing decisions because you're a stakeholder. So of course, you recommend to buy the thing that you're certified in and know.
Yes, we would all do the same.
Right?
Yes.
So that's how that sort of self-perpetuates. Anyway, that's all I got. I just wanted to tell you that Macs are more reliable to people who are already using a Mac.
Well, I'm wondering about the clients that Jamf uses, because, I mean, we're talking corporate level things. You can well imagine that they have lots of customers, but in a corporation that has many other people who don't use Macs. So it'd be interesting to see if the IT department that were dealing with it were also dealing with Windows day-to-day and still had this preference for Macs.
Well, I mean, it's entirely possible, right, that they're running Windows as their servers and things in the back end. But if they're handling desktop support, they'd rather hand out Mac because they know they don't have to fool with it.
Right. Yeah. Fewer calls. That makes sense. Yes. Not job preservation, but job sanity preserving. Yes.
Right. I mean, if you've got enough tickets to justify that you're keeping the servers up and don't want to fool with desktop support, that's one way of doing it.
There you go. So we've just solved IT problems at corporations across the world.
And look on the that note, we'll be back next week. How about that?
Excellent. Okay, how can we top this?
William, where can people find you on the internet?
Thank you for changing the subject there. I know the answer to this one. I'm on Twitter as W Gallagher, but I'm also on email as william@appleinsider.com. And if you should email me about sponsorship things, I do not know how it works, but I know the person who does. So we'll sort that out.
Brilliant. I'm Victor. I'm at VMarks on Twitter. Email me at victor@appleinsider.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's been wonderful having you here. Let's see you again next week. Bye, everybody.